Gideon Optics changes the way you enjoy your gun. From rifle optics like the Guardian LPVO to pistol optics like the Omega and Rock, Gideon Optics engineers sights and scopes packed with bleeding-edge features and price them fairly for gun owners that require the best on the range, on duty, or on their hip. GideonOptics.com, where affordability meets quality. Save 10% with code FRN10. Now, to your podcast.
Welcome back to the Zerk Coffee and Chaos podcast, a show where we talk about anything and everything relating to what it means to be a survivalist and a prepared individual in today's society. I'm your host, Chris Bartigone, ZP002. Back with me on the show, my co-host, Jamie Franks. Jamie, welcome back.
Thank you.
Glad to have you here, man. Glad to have you here.
Glad to be here. It's been an interesting last couple of days.
I know. You have experienced quite a little situation in your week. We had some plans going up, and I was met with a text message, basically, and a picture of what your car had an experience with, and it wasn't just a breakdown. So it was
and I was in it. So
pretty brutal accident. Obviously, thankfully, you are okay, and your daughter was not in the car. And what, were you on your way to work?
I was. So we are, like, you know, for anybody that doesn't know, I'm still on active duty in the military. I'm a flight instructor for Navy hovercrafts. I was on my way to do night flights. And I, you know, for anybody that also doesn't know, people on social media have famously kind of made fun of me about it, but I don't care. I drive what's known as a lesbian limousine, the Subaru Outback. Gosh. And it was a very nice, very expensive, very fully loaded and modified by me, additionally, Subaru Outback. And I was sitting at a dead stop, and somebody just, like, crashed straight into me from behind at probably about 40, 45 miles an hour is probably what I think. But the car was a total loss. But, like, you know, Subarus have a phenomenal safety rating, and that seems to have been the case. I didn't get injured at all. I know this is not the subject of today's podcast, really, but, quickly, there's a couple of lessons to be learned. Sure. There. Like, I was thinking about it. Number one, sorry if I sound like I'm beating a dead drum or whatever. But health and fitness matter, like, because I keep myself in good shape. Like, I took a hard hit and I'm fine. Everybody's like, oh, probably tomorrow morning you're going to be sore. It's like, it's now been almost 48 hours and I'm not sore at all. It took a hard enough hit to basically, like, it bent my whole car like this. And I'm fine. And the other thing is, like, I think you and Paul have actually done a podcast that kind of addressed this, if not directly, at least kind of on the outskirts of it. But, like, being, you know, somewhat financially secure, where, like, I know people that have gotten, because again, if you don't know, traffic tickets in California are quite expensive. Right. Like, a speeding ticket is going to cost you like $500. I know people whose lives have been completely upset by a $500 speeding ticket. Yeah. But, like, I'm, you know, thankfully now, and I will say, like, after I got divorced, my financial situation was very, very not good. But I've rebounded from that, and I'm back into a place where I have good insurance, and my car was, like, this is actually the worst part of it. I was three payments away from paying my car off, but I've got decent credit. I've got good insurance. And, like, the fact that I total lost my car less than 48 hours ago is really not that impactful. Like, insurance is going to take care of this. I'm going to get a new car probably today or tomorrow, and life goes on. And
and obviously getting into an accident is not something that we're ever prepared for.
Right.
But understanding what you need to do after that is, you know, basic grown-up stuff, right? I mean, you need to understand what happens next and how to proceed. If you don't, that's fine. I mean, if this is the first time you're getting into an accident that is taking you down this path, that's okay. There's resources out
there.
This is
the first time I've ever totaled a car. I've never had to deal with a totaled car before.
Okay. And I honestly, I've actually never had to deal with it. I mean, I've gotten into accidents before, but they were on older cars when I was younger, and we haven't experienced that. But, you know, there's information out there. There's resources out there where you can kind of understand what steps you need to take. But that's important to be prepared for those types of things. Obviously, you weren't hurt. The person that that hit you, I don't believe they weren't hurt from what you've told me. So that you didn't have to render first aid to anybody.
Correct.
Yeah, so it's been quite a week for you, man. So I'm glad you're here, and I'm glad all is well, and hopefully you'll end up with a new vehicle out of this. What you decide to get will greatly impact how much the internet and I make fun of you from here on out. So there is
hey,
that.
Man, like I am not ashamed of my lesbian limousine. When I want to be a tough guy, I still have my badass
right.
Tacoma rock crawler that's all lifted and overland capable and all that. But for getting the groceries, man, the Subaru gets it done, and hauling around scuba diving gear and all that.
That's all that matters. It's what works for you. I mean, there was a time when, you know, you would get the hottest vehicle out there. And I guess if people are out there and they have that kind of fundage, then do what makes you happy. You know, I bought a truck in 2021. I think it was my second brand new vehicle ever. I love my truck, but I'm also looking at getting rid of this truck, for something smaller, just because at the end of the day, you know, pulling into parking spaces and whatnot is just a lot easier when you have a smaller vehicle. But anyway,
well, I know, like, this, it's not really a fair comparison because it's television and it's make believe. But like on The Walking Dead, they famously drove like Pontiac Aztecs and Hyundai, like mid-size SUVs and stuff, because they're good on gas. They're reliable cars that, you know, so, and you know, and then we could go down the road of like being a gray man versus being a guy in a lifted Ford F-350 on 35s, and you know,
true, and that, it, so. And you know, and what's, I guess what's good about what you just said is we all want to be prepared all the time, and you know, I've said it before, and you've echoed it. You know, what I have on me gets me to my vehicle, right? And so I understand that what I have in my vehicle gets me to that next step, whatever that may be. Does that mean that I need to have everything that I own, like my kit, my rifle, all of that in my truck, so I can get the 10 miles or less to home to my house? No, but there is the thought process out there of what if you can't get to your house? What if you need to go farther, right? I talk about what I have in my truck gets me to my house, but okay, if I can't get to my house, what's next? Do I have enough on me to do the next thing? And the answer is I have enough on me to get more. And I've always said that, like, I don't have 20,000 rounds of 9mm and 223/556, but I have enough to get more. Should I need to?
Yeah. And I mean, and there's this leads into a whole, this opens Pandora's box here. Cause you just said a whole mouthful, but there's an actual, historical reference for exactly what you were just talking about. In the late 1930s, early 1940s, prior to 1944, where we invaded Normandy and invaded France, when all of France was still, you know, Nazi occupied, instead of airdropping like machine guns and munitions, that like they made these little pistols called a Liberator. That was a little single shot pistol.
Right.
And the whole point of that pistol was that I can take this very concealable one shot little gun and walk up to the back of a Nazi soldier and now I have his stuff.
Right.
So there actually is real historical context for exactly what you just said. And a second ago when you were like, do I need to have all of my stuff in my truck? I was shaking my head yes, because I was agreeing with your point, not because the answer was
right,
yes.
Oh, right, right. Yeah. So, you know, just recently we've had a member put up a pose a question wanting to talk about kit. And I feel like today's show and what we were just talking about, and then the conversation that you and I had, which was about, you know, the topic about today's show, all can kind of be intertwined. You know, I've lately online, I've seen obviously that post, and then I've seen a lot of people showing off their rifle and, you know, their AR rifle, and they're kind of giving you a walkthrough from what they've got from the front of their rifle all the way to the back. And they've got this suppressor and this light and this riser and this optic. And I mean, I love it. And, you know, I've got a few rifles that I enjoy. But every day I carry a pistol, and I know that you and I have talked about the use of a rifle and the training with a rifle. But then we also have talked about, you know, what I have on me is what the initial situation is going to be handled with. And what that is a pistol. And it's not even a, you know, a full size Glock 17 with a 21 round mag and whatnot. It's a Glock 48 with a 10 round mag. And I've got a spare 10 round mag in the holster with me. So, you know, and it's kind of back to like the two are connected, right? So there's that, yep. That's that daily piece. And then we talked about kit. And, you know, I even responded to the person's post saying, well, it really depends on what the kit is being used for. If we're talking going to the range, then, I mean, you can have different setups that you want to train with, right? Like you can have, if you want to train with a plate carrier on, have at it. But I just don't see the need to do that. If you want to use a chest rig, if you want to go over the battle belt, great. But I would also implore people that their kit starts with what they're wearing today. So my kit right now is an appendix holster with a firearm, a spare mag, a knife, a flashlight, and that's it. That's my kit. That's my kit that has to get me out of the situation that may or may not pop off in the local Starbucks, Dunkin' Donuts, Wendy's, mall, wherever you are thinking about it. I get everybody's excitement, or I don't want to say excitement, but I get everybody out there wanting to experience that situation like The Walking Dead, right? Or I just saw the movie A Quiet Place Day One, where aliens—
Oh, I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, aliens come in and, you know, the world has ended. And that's the day that I will don my chest rig and you know, and sling my rifle and go walking down the street to the next safe place. But I don't see that as a viable option, or I don't see that as a viable outcome anytime soon. Now, in that situation, Jamie, what would you prefer to have, a rifle or a pistol? Or both?
In which situation?
In that Starbucks situation. Well, no. Yeah. And yeah, end of the world, quiet place situation.
So, in that, so I'm not really a tattoo guy, but I've long said, like, two good tattoos that I would be willing to put on my body are what you said, what I have on my person gets me to my car, what I have in my car gets me home, and then what I have at home gets me through the revolution or whatever, right? And then, you know, Paul has said, whatever weapon, you know, in the military, we train that our primary weapon is our rifle,
right,
and our secondary weapon is our pistol. But Paul said, your primary weapon is whatever you have on you.
Right.
So in the given situation of an alien invasion, or like some type of like massive civil unrest where, you know, where civil services have completely broken down and you're kind of on your own, which we've brushed up against sure. a couple of times yeah. in recent years. Yeah. In those situations, I will 100% take a rifle because like tactics and laws and rules and societal acceptance and all that crap aside, the best tool for ending another human and possibly an alien is a rifle. Like hands that like just ballistics, magazine capacity, lethality, distance, like, you know, violence of action, like, you know, over
sure
right. all of that is gonna like it's not even arguable. All of that is better with the rifle, but that, you know,
but here
kind of a very specific circumstance.
Well, right. So with that being said, with the chance of that being the case, does it make more sense to train? We just said, right, that outcome seems a lot less likely. Where you're going to be able to do that. So I guess, let me ask a question before I go and make that statement. So do you train more with your rifle or with your pistol?
This is not really a conscious decision or on purpose, but I do find that year after year, like kind of at the end of the year, beginning of the new year, when I'm always kind of like taking stock of ammo and all that stuff, year after year, I do trend to... Like I can tell I shoot more rifle rounds per year than pistol rounds.
Okay.
Typically on an annual basis.
And you said that that's not a conscious decision. It just ends up that way.
It's not. Yeah. So, not to sound like a douche, but like at my level, I'm not the world's greatest pistol shooter, but I'm probably, if you lined up every single person in the United States that owns a pistol, I'll probably outshoot 99% of them. If you line up every person in the United States that owns a rifle, percentage wise, I'm probably close to outshooting 100% of them. Like, so I'm really good with both weapon systems. I'm far better than most people. But within that, I'm definitely more of a rifleman. I've always considered myself more of a rifleman. My partner that I teach with at my training company, like he and I have kind of agreed that like we're at this eternal stalemate where he is better with a pistol than I am, right. And I'm better with a rifle than he is. And like, we can really come close to each other. But again, when you do trend analysis, he tends to barely outshoot me with a pistol, and I tend to always barely outshoot him with a rifle. And so at my level, when I tend to go to the range, I do tend to take both weapon systems with me, rifle and pistol.
Okay.
And I do still tend to train more with a rifle and kind of integrate the pistol into the rifle. It's fairly rare that I ever go and train solely on pistol. I will either train solely on rifle or I'll do both. And it's not that I never train on pistol, but I do train more with the rifle because it is either, it's either I train rifle more because I like it and I'm good at it, or integrate pistol into rifle. But I do train pistol some, but not as much. So I guess that's the answer.
Yeah. I really do find that interesting because obviously I have a different mindset, maybe because it's just based on a civilian mindset and just always a civilian mindset with no military background. But I definitely had pistols and more of them before I got a rifle.
I think that's probably true of most people.
Right. And I carry a pistol every single day. And I have taken just pistol classes. Now, I did get to do a little bit more training when we had King 33 available to us, and I did transition pistol and rifle, and it really just depended on what we were going to do that night. But I have predominantly spent more time with a pistol than I have with a rifle. And to me, it just makes more sense because it is what I carry every single day. Do I have a rifle available in those situations? I do. Do I have the gear should I need to, you know, Red Dawn it up in the woods? I do. But I've got to make sure that I can get to that spot first. Mm-hmm. And in order to do that, I've got to be good with what I have on me. And that's not, you know, like you watch all these guys on the interwebs, on the YouTubes, the Instagrams with their drop leg holster and their sub 1 second draw off with, you know, when it's right there at their hand. But, you know, my question is like, I'm not wearing a drop leg holster Monday through Friday going to my office. I mean, I carry an appendix holster, an inside the waistband appendix holster with a smaller firearm than I would if I'm going to take just a regular, you know, pistol 201, 301, whatever the class is. So I've taken training with both. Just recently, we've talked about it. The class that I took up at the SIG Academy with the 365 macro, that is a daily carry. Unfortunately, I have not gotten back out to the range to troubleshoot the issue with that firearm. So I did switch over to the 48, which I have taken to the range a lot. Have I trained with that? No. Have I taken an EDC class? But when you go to the range to shoot pistol, you're just doing it in a transition type situation and not training just pistol, like maybe doing a concealed carry class or an everyday carry class typically, right?
No, I do that. So, but it's just less frequent. So when you average everything out, the averages, I do spend a little bit more time on my rifle, but I actually do agree with you. I'm just coming at it kind of from the other end. So, one of the things, I actually don't think we've hit on this in a while, but in some of the earlier podcast episodes, like we hit on this quite often, like the biggest kind of error that I see people make, you know, within the tactical space or within the prepper space is really being objectively honest with yourself. Like what is the most likely thing that is going to happen?
Right.
And are you training to that? Now, with me, there's a couple of things. I was a water survival instructor. I was a rescue swimmer instructor. And in both of those schools, we would always train the trainees for the worst case scenario, because if I train you to a level where you can handle the worst case scenario, like in rescue swimmer school, your final practical that we would grade you on in the water is a nighttime 6-person multi-rescue that mimics basically like a helicopter crash.
Oh, wow.
Where there's 6 victims of, you know, different levels of injury and stuff. So the rescue swimmer has to enter the water by themselves. And typically in rescue swimmers, we typically work in pairs, but to graduate school, you have to do this as an individual. So you have to perform a 6-person multi-rescue at night in full equipment in the dark by yourself and do it correctly. And rescue and recover all 6 victims. So there's an extremely low probability that you would ever be faced with that situation as rescue swimmer. It's not impossible, mm-hmm. but it's extremely improbable. But if through the course of the school, we can train them to handle that, then theoretically you can handle anything beneath it. Right.
Got it.
So, that's one part of the thing, but the other part is, I'm still on active duty in the military. If China invades Taiwan tonight, there's a decent chance, because of what my job specialty is, I might be packing my shit tomorrow to go. And I might be put in an environment where I need to be able to perform in full kit with body armor, with a full loadout, with a rifle, with a pistol. Now, other people aren't like that. And other people can tell themselves they want to train to be like that in case, you know, like a Red Dawn situation or anything like that ever happens here. They want to be ready. And if you've never trained in full kit before, and all of a sudden you think you're just going to throw it on and down the road you go, you're going to have a really bad reality check. There used to be this event that I would go to in Texas every year. It was just outside of Dallas. It was the Battle Road USA 5K run and gun. And there was you had to do it in full equipment. Yep. Whatever you started with is all you had. Like, you would get penalized if you ran out of ammo, or you would get penalized. They would have water stations, but you were actually penalized if you drank from them, because you were supposed to take however much water you thought you needed.
Okay.
And it was a 5K natural terrain course with, I think, 8 shooting stations, sprinkled throughout the 5K. And you were graded on how fast you completed the course and your shooting score. So you had to be good at all. You had to be in shape enough to run the course fast, and you had to be a good enough shooter to shoot all the stages fast.
Right.
But I only tell that story to that most people that quote unquote train in full gear have never actually done anything like that and actually put themselves to the test. And if you've got all your cool guy gear sitting in the garage, but you never train with it, you're going to have a really harsh reality check. So if for whatever reason you think you're a person who might need to actually wear that equipment for a long duration of time in a stressful environment, you do need to train to it. But people need to be honest with themselves and understand that for most people, most of the time, that is not going to be the case. And there's a going back to probabilities and likelihoods, there's a high probability that it never will be. Right. I have all my cool guy high speed kit. I've got everything. I've got body armor. I've got helmet. I've got dual tube NVGs. I've got a super squared away plate carrier rig that I've actually worn in a combat environment that is all ironed out.
Right.
Like everything is the way I want it, and everything is the way that I know that it works for me. It's been tested and it's ready to go, and it's in my garage because I'm not going to need it at Starbucks tomorrow.
Right. So do you think, going back to what you said, do you think that it's important for people to at least attempt to train with getting that gear on? And I mean, maybe not so much shooting with it, but put your plate carrier on and walk 10 miles. I mean, do you think it's like more important to do that, or, you know, then add that and then add shooting with a plate carrier? Because obviously mounting your rifle normally with just your party shirt on is a little bit different than having to work around a plate carrier and doing reloads and just even your sling, how you wear that rifle, and then talk about doing transition. Do you think it's important for somebody to at least try to do that if that's what they choose? Or
I'll answer the question this way. If you're not willing to do that, you should just sell all your gear.
Right.
If you're going to spend the time and the effort and the money to buy this kind of gear, you absolutely should put it on and go. Like, 10 miles is a little extreme. I bet you there's a lot of people that, if they're real honest with themselves, have never done a 10 mile ruck or 10 mile like gear walk in one shot.
Right.
Sorry, but it goes back to being honest with yourself. Again, like my partner Matt that I teach with at ASDS, he's an Iraq combat veteran, multi-combat tours, multiple gunfights. Like, he's a strong guy. He's in shape. Like, he would probably kick both of our asses if you and I both tried to take him down. Like, he's a good fighter. He's a strong dude. He's pretty in shape. But he's about 10 years older than me. And when we teach the rifle classes, he prefers that I take the lead on the rifle class, because standing on a flat range with all this stuff on for 8 hours, like, because he was injured in combat and has service related injuries and stuff from his time in the military, like, just standing on a flat range teaching other people with this stuff on for 6 to 8 hour training day, like, hurts him.
Right.
And my point is, like, he's not a weak dude, you know? And so, like, if you're going to have all this stuff, yes, you need to train with it. But, going back to the mantra that I love, what I have on my person gets me to my car, what I have in my car gets me home. I have a little go bag that looks like a little gym bag. It looks like a bag somebody would have their gym clothes and running shoes in. And I have, like, what I call a bank robber chest rig. A slick low profile plate carrier with really light low profile level 3A. They're not level 4, they're level 3A plates in it, but it's just a slick low profile plate carrier that I could wear under my shirt if I needed to. A paddle holster and a clip-on magazine pouch.
Right.
And my rifle and my little bank robber rig. So just with that, with my regular conceal carry, because we've talked about before, I conceal carry, my daily conceal carry weapon is a Glock 43 with the Terran Tactical magazine extensions, and then one spare mag. And then all the other stuff that I have in my pockets. So if something pops off in Starbucks, I can, you know, that's more than adequate to defend myself because I live in Southern California. I normally wear like flip flops and shorts every day. So if something were to happen, I've got a pistol, a knife, a flashlight, all, you know, all my EDC stuff and one spare magazine that gets me to my car. If I can get me to my car, I can change my shoes. Cause I do keep a change of shoes in my car. I can actually put shoes on my feet. But that little go bag, it's not my super duper tactical combat gear loadout. Like I would take on deployment. It's a reduced, like low signature version that affords me the capability of layering up or layering down my overtness or covertness.
Sure. And I think, go ahead. Sorry. Finish.
Also, I was just, like, I can put that low profile plate carrier under my shirt. I can put on the pistol and the mag pouches and put on a jacket. And now I'm just going to look like normal dude, but I'm a little bit plussed up from what my EDC is.
Right.
Then if the situation warrants it, I can throw on that bank robber chest rig real quick over the top, go to my rifle, and now I'm overt. And now I'm like what I call I'm going heavy and I'm going loud. With my rifle. And I can like that's enough kit that I could probably do pretty well in a little gunfight and get myself home where now I can
And that's
be like commando and
exactly. And that's one of the things that the one of the ZERT members put up on as kind of his answer to that. He had three different setups, and one of them he referred to as heavy, and basically it was a kind of more stationary setup. So where you have kind of bunkered down, if you will, and you know, you're just kind of you're not moving. You don't have to be mobile.
One little addition, remember where you're at, but, in my go bag, I have just a plain black, like not tactical looks. It looks like what a college kid would carry, just a plain black backpack.
Right. That's important.
And my rifle that I have in the gym bag, it has the Law Tactical folding stock on it. So if I don't want to go full overt, I can do pistol, mag pouches, jacket over it, plate carrier underneath the shirt. I can put that bank robber rig and my collapsed rifle in that little backpack, and I'm still ready, but I'm still covert.
Right.
So that sounds like where the guy you're talking about kind of sounds like where he's at.
No, I and you know what? Actually, I don't think the firearm piece came into anything in that post. I don't believe it went down to anything firearm related. I think it was more just kit to wear on your person. You know, and you brought up obviously a good point. Covert to overt is a big thing. And whether you're talking, you know, the peaceful riots that we are, I'm sorry, protests that we had during 2020, you know, being able to blend in gray man, Z man, whatever you want to call it, I think is important. Would I blend in this shirt? And for those that are just listening on Spotify or Apple, it's a very Hawaiian-esque party shirt. No, probably not. I would probably stand out. But would I look threatening? Probably not. I mean, you know, you're just – and sure, you brought up like a backpack, having a, you know, FDE backpack with all the Molly attachments on the back, probably not the best choice. Having a JanSport, you know, little backpack that you would put your school books in is probably makes a little bit more sense. For me, I've got a similar type bag in the vehicle, but it's one of three. One of them is basically just med. So it's got medical stuff in there with, you know, flex cuffs, this, that, and the other thing, a compass. The other one is a smaller Victos bag that's got a little bit more medical stuff, less medical stuff than the larger bag does. Spare magazines for a couple of different platforms, if you will, whether it's you know, a pistol or a rifle or a brand. And then there would be the bag that I would have kind of as a sling bag, which has the pistol in it that takes me from the small one, the little 10-round mag, to it's a 19X. So now you're talking, you know, 17 rounds with 21 round and a 33 round stick as well. Still allows me to be a little bit concealed, but also gives me a little bit more, you know, without having the to break the rifle out. I guess my next question is back to you. With all of that stuff, you have it in a very inconspicuous type bag in your vehicle. You know, do you carry a, do you think it's wise to carry a rifle or keep a rifle in your car at all times? Now, let me just follow that with, I understand that there are certain parts of this country where that is probably very, very normal. And if you live in those parts of the country, have at it. I, the only thing I would add before you, I give it back to you to answer, if you do that, maybe not advertise it with every, my car is protected by Smith & Wesson, Molon Labe, you know, come and take it, stickers on the back of your vehicle. Just an observation. But what do you think?
So you hit on a few good points there. Point number one is, like, I'm from a very rural part of North Carolina.
Yeah.
Where, yeah, I mean, this has kind of become a little cliche, I think, but I mean, I did grow up in a place and a time where, you know, all the boys my age drove pickup trucks, including myself. And from the time I was turned 16 and got my pickup truck, I had a shotgun in the little rack and the visible in the back window. And it pretty much stayed there all the time, day in, day out, even when I went to school. I graduated high school before, I think the year before Columbine.
Okay.
So, like, you know, school shootings and those kind of things weren't on anybody's mind back then. And like right. I was, the guys I was friends with would go duck hunting before school or deer hunting before school. And they right. had their hunting rifles and shotguns and stuff. So, and actually back then in that place and time, I don't know anybody. I cannot name one person whose truck got broken into and their gun got stolen. And so you're correct. There are places in this country where you probably can still do that and get away with it. I do not live in one of those places, not by a long shot.
Right.
You also brought up another good point about having the stickers and stuff on your vehicle, because this is a thing that's Googleable. I like that
good word.
Yeah. A few years ago at the USPSA Nationals in Las Vegas, like, you don't have to be that smart to understand there's an organization called the United States Practical Shooters Association, and they have these big matches all over the country. Right. And they're these big sponsored matches that are hosted by this sponsored range that has a partnership with this hotel, and all the shooters are staying at this hotel that's near the range. And a lot of these people have SIG, Smith & Wesson, come and take it, 3% or Molon Labe, Punisher, that, you know,
right.
Like all Daniel Defense, all this stuff. And, they think it was either gang related or cartel related, but, it doesn't. All you have to have is one of these, and you can go online and find out where most shooters are going to be staying. And a couple of years ago at the USPSA Nationals in Las Vegas, the hotel where most of the shooters were staying, one night, it was like, I think it was like overnight in the middle of the night hours, during, cause most USPSA Nationals matches are 3 to 4 days.
Yep.
I think it was the night of the, it was the night after the second day of competition, and this organized crime organization went and targeted that hotel on purpose and broke into every car that had a USPSA sticker, a Daniel Defense sticker, a SIG sticker, and they got a lot of firearms.
Now,
so there hold is on. That.
Let me just jump in there. Listen, I get that obviously it was very opportunistic for these people, but why were those gun cases not taken out of the vehicle into their hotel rooms? I mean, we all went to Oklahoma, and for the Genesis event, and we all took our cases out of the rental car and put it in our hotel room. Like, we didn't leave anything in there. I mean, sure, you want to leave your belt and your, you know, your range bag with your ear pro and whatnot in there, but the big giant case that holds the firearms, bring that in. So just to interject, like, that does not seem to me, that is not a prepared individual. They dropped the ball.
My friend that permanently was relieved of his $3,000 2011 pistol now agrees. And really that comes out of complacency and laziness. It comes out. It's like that saying where, like, by the time a person actually gets a DUI, they've probably driven drunk. There's like 57 times or something. And before they get a DUI. And, yeah. And I think it's that. I think it's shooters that have gotten comfortable because they've done this 100 times before and right. they've stayed at this hotel before and it's never been a problem. So, and that kind of leads into where I was going with your question. Do I carry that, the go bag that I described earlier, do I carry that every single day? And the answer is no. I do an evaluation of where I'm going, how long I'm going to be gone, when I'm going to be back, how far away from my house am I going. Anytime I'm going anywhere where I'm doing a road trip, which I do several times a year with, maybe a couple of times a year with my daughter,
right?
Year after year. But anytime I'm going on a road trip or anything where I'm going to be staying at a hotel, for sure it's coming with me and it comes into the hotel with me, but it's definitely going to be in my car then. Anytime where, like if I have to go into like a major, urban center, I'll usually take it with me. Because again, back to that mindset of if I can train myself for the worst case scenario, I should be able to handle anything below that.
Right.
Like if something bad goes down, like you said, like the protest, the violent protests and stuff that we saw just 4 years ago.
Right.
Like literally this time, 4 years ago.
Yep.
Lots of people who thought they were going downtown for a nice dinner with their wife or girlfriend got caught in the middle of these situations with no warning. And that's, if anything like that happens, that's how it's going to happen.
Right.
And being in the middle of an urban center with nothing but your hands in your pockets like that, that's a worst case scenario. So anytime I'm traveling where I'm going to be staying at a hotel, anytime I'm traveling where I'm going to an urban center, sometimes on a daily basis, depending on where I'm going, if I know, like if I'm going from point A to point B and I know my vehicle is going to be in a fairly secure location until I return back to point A, I'll throw it in the car because the way I have it packaged up, it literally takes me 10 seconds to either put it in my car or 10 seconds to take it out. But if you're a person that sees these advertisements for this stuff online, and I get it, it looks sexy. And believe me, I understand. I have a Ghostbusters proton pack that I paid a lot of money for hanging on the wall over here beside me. So I understand the allure of the fantasy of it. But if you see these advertisements of things on Instagram and Facebook where it's like this tactical like thing that you mount to the back of your F-150 seat and it's got your rifle and your med kit and your gun belt and your mags and all that stuff, like kind of what's displayed behind me, you're basically turning the backside of your passenger seat of your truck into a gun wall.
Right.
That
right.
looks awesome. Looks pretty, but that shit's going to get stolen, man.
Like, so yeah. You know, and that's why I go back to that whole the rifle thing, and I know that I'm being opposite of maybe a lot of people's viewpoint on this, but I think that's fine because that's what allows people to have good conversation. In my opinion, for me, what would make sense would be to make myself as small as possible, or as less visual or visible as possible. And for me to do that, being able to have enough on me to feel safe and not stand out in a crowd, in a situation, the pistol makes the most sense. I get it if there's like, you know, the situation turns really, really bad where now you've got obviously waves of people and they're armed, then yes, maybe that's where that rifle comes in and becomes that force multiplier, because like you said, now you can engage a lot more targets. It's a more stable platform. You do have the ability to carry more ammunition for the most part.
And like, although I do not agree with the gun store salesmen that tell people that they should buy a shotgun because if the bad guy breaks into their house, all they got to do is rack that shoddy.
Right.
And the bad guys are just going to piss their pants and run away. I do not agree with that. However, kind of like what we talked about in the last podcast, like in every fight, there's at least one person that doesn't really want to be in the fight.
Right.
And so using the 2020 peaceful protests, aka violent riots that happened. One of the biggest ones, one of the most televised ones, happened like less than 10 miles away from where I'm sitting right now. And so like I was watching that footage on TV less than 10 miles away from my house. And like, I probably, like a lot of the people that listen to this podcast, I watched that and I was like, nah, dog, like that, like, cause they were pulling people out of cars. Yeah. They just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. And I was like, nah, dog, that's not going to be me. And what you were talking about, a force multiplier, like if my vehicle is getting swarmed with a bunch of, you know, 20-year-old Antifa turds that have a Starbucks cup full of cement, and they start swarming my car, and I step out of my car with a Mark 18 and fire a burst into the air, that is going to change the minds of almost 100% of them.
Yeah, I agree.
And so, but you have to be realistic about where you are with that. Like, because right. I've probably told this story and I've probably told it on this podcast before, but it is a perfect example. I was in a movie theater a couple of years ago and this guy walks in and he looks like he just tripped and fell out of the 5.11 catalog.
Right, yeah.
Wearing 5.11 gear head to toe with the little crossbody man purse that I'm sure had a gun and magazines and an IFAK and all that stuff in it. And I'm not willing to be that guy. I'm just
no, like, no. And I'm not either. Like I said, this is the look right here.
Yeah. And I'm 44 years old, so I'm roughly 16,000 days old.
There you go.
And to this point in my life, I've gotten in a gunfight in this country zero times. So right. I'm at a batting average of 0 of 16,000. So yeah. I'm not willing to alter my entire persona and state of dress to look like 5'11 tactical guy just right. so I can tell myself that I'm going to be ready for any situation. And like we have a saying in the military that I started hearing it in about 2008, 2009, when I think kind of the so-called tactical industry was like ramping up because everybody was seeing like the global war on terrorism on TV. Everybody was seeing the guys in combat in Iraq and Afghanistan. And a lot of people that weren't in the military decided they want to start buying tactical gear and they want to look like this and they want to do this type of training. And I want to go take a Chris Costa class and all this stuff. And the saying is it takes 10 years to be an operator. It takes 10 minutes to dress like one. And right. so, and a lot of people are like, whether they want to admit it or not, they are in that mindset. And I'm not going Dakota Meyer here, and I'm not telling you not to, and I'm not telling you that you shouldn't, but I am going to tell you, you need to be realistic and you need to understand what you're doing. And you actually need to do training. Like we talked about at the top, where if you're going to have this gear, you need to throw it on and go walk 5 or 6 miles with it on
right.
and get a feel for what that's like. And then,
well, just
another thing.
Oh, go ahead. Nope.
No. I'm not, my job in the military right now, like I'm no longer an active like tactical trainer or anything. So I don't really have my finger on the pulse of what's being taught right now, because that's not what I do anymore. But we used to train what we called first line, second line, third line gear. And your third line gear, if you can like picture like a combat soldier fully kitted out with a backpack on. Like your third line gear is basically the backpack. That's your tent, your sleeping, it's your sustainment gear.
Right.
Your tent, your sleeping bag, your raincoat, your MREs, the spare batteries for your radio, all that stuff is in your backpack. And like to give you like a little example, in the movie Heartbreak Ridge, at the end, they swim ashore, the Marines, the recon Marines, and they've got all their gear, including their packs with all their sustainment gear and stuff in it.
Right.
As soon as they get into a firefight, the packs come off. They ditch their packs. Now they're down to their second and first line gear. Your second line gear is what most people think of that combat equipment, your plate carrier, your chest rig, your rifle, your helmet.
Right.
So as soon as I get into a gunfight, I'm dropping that third line gear. Now I'm down to just my fighting gear. Third line gear is your sustainment gear. Second line and first line gear is your fighting gear. I'm down to that. Now, if we get into like a bad situation, like a lone survivor, think about that, where now this firefight has not gone my way. Now I need to get light and fast and escape and evade, I can ditch that plate carrier, ditch that chest rig. I'm out of ammo. I can, my rifle's no good anymore. If I don't have ammo, I can drop that. Now I'm down to my gun belt, my IFAC and my E&E kit and just my uniform and whatever I have in my pockets. And now I can escape and evade. And I still have my secondary weapon, my pistol and my med kit and my survival kit. And now I'm on escape and evasion. And you can apply that same principle without having all the cool guy Navy SEAL Delta Force gear. You can apply that same type of principle with your EDC, which is kind of what I've done. And like you said, I dress like this every day with shorts and flip-flops, but I'm still applying that first line, second line, third line gear principle, but in a way that I think is fairly realistic.
Okay, good. Now I want to go back to something. Okay. And you were sounding good. You were looking good. So I didn't want to interrupt.
Ooh.
Yeah, I know. And I want, this is to everybody out there listening, and it's basic. I want to highlight what you just said. You are zero for, what did you say? 16,000 was the, what was it?
I'm roughly 16,000 days old.
16,000 days old. And he's zero for 16,000 on having to use his firearm in any kind of situation. And everybody that's listening to this show
in this
should,
country,
in this country, everybody listening to the show should take that. Take that equation and apply it to your life. And that will give you a little bit of insight on kind of what we're talking about and the point that I'm trying to drive across. I mean, it's zero for 16,000 with any firearm. It's not like, well, it's, you know, zero for 16,000 with my pistol, but with my rifle, I've had, you know, I'm one for five. Like it's both. So I know we're a little bit farther away from when we talked about that, and the points that you just brought up are really good. I like that whole first line, second line, third line, kind of mindset and thought process for everybody. So in reality, your that third layer of gear is your vehicle in this situation, or that's how we're putting that together?
No, I mean, I would say, like my first line gear is my daily EDC.
EDC, right.
So my first line gets me to my second line, which would be the stuff that I have in my vehicle.
Got it. Perfect.
And then get myself home, and now I've got everything.
Right, yeah.
And
okay.
Now I can.
Perfect. You know, I and that's a great. Offensive. Yeah, and I think that's a great, great way to look at it. You know, I'm not shitting on the rifle. I think the rifle is a great platform, and I would love to do as much training with the rifle as I do with the pistol. But it, every time I start to kind of unwrap that, my brain stops and said, but every single day you have your pistol on you and you only have a rifle near you. You don't have it, like it's in the safe at the office. It's, you know, it's in its spot at the house. Like you don't train with it. At night when I'm sitting there on the couch, whether I'm, you know, watching a TV show or horrible coverage of the news, I can do dry fire practicing with my pistol easier than with the rifle. I'm not saying you can't, and I'm not saying you shouldn't. You can 100% do as much dry fire practice with the rifle. And in some situations, like if you have a Mantis X or a Mantis Blackbeard, training with your rifle is so easy and so awesome. Like you can literally clear your house with your rifle and set up targets and get an accurate read on training where, you know, there are training tools out there for your pistol, but it's not as it's not your pistol that you can do it with. Meaning,
right.
With the Mantis, you have to manually cycle with a tool like the CERT pistols. You can do a little bit more, but it's
not a real pistol. But that's
true.
Not to get too far off, but with the Blackbeard X that goes in your rifle, it's your gun, your sights, your trigger.
Right.
Like it's your actual rifle that has been turned into a training device.
Yeah. Right. So,
it resets the trigger.
Exactly. I mean, it's not like you can't do that same kind of training with the rifle. You can do up drills. You can, you know, you can get used to and acclimated to your rifle around your house. But like I said, every day when I do dry firing or just reloads and whatnot, it's just more natural for me. And folks, that's the best part about all of this is it's whatever's comfortable for you.
Go ahead. The thought experiment that I came up with before that I gave to you is if the only information that I have is whatever situation you can think of, I will need a firearm. That's the only given fact in the situation. Beyond that, I will let you think of the craziest, most ridiculous, like think of any scenario you can possibly think of. But the only thing, the only rule is that whatever scenario you think of, I do get to have a firearm.
Hold on. At this point, this is going to be the comment section. This is the comment we want in below. So if you're watching it on YouTube, if you're listening on Spotify, Apple, this is the information, this is the feedback that we want from you. So go ahead. So this is the scenario. This is a thought-provoking scenario for you. We've touched on it before, but the comment section needs to light up below. So go ahead.
Any situation you can think of that we already know in advance does require the use of a firearm, think of anything you want, and I'm telling you, I can't think of any situation where I wouldn't rather have a rifle. If you give me the option of having a rifle, I will take a rifle in almost any situation. That's the thought experiment part.
Okay.
Now, the suffix to
that. So we're asking people to come up with a situation where the known is you have to have a firearm, but come up with a situation where the pistol is the better choice than the rifle.
Yes.
Okay.
I have done this over and I cannot think of any situation where I wouldn't rather have a rifle given the choice. Now, the catch is you have to be realistic and you're not always going to have that choice because I'm not going, as we've touched on in many different ways, I'm just not willing to carry a rifle around with me all the time there. And, you know, there's many places in this country where that wouldn't even be legal anyway. And so that's where the reality side has to kick in, where Paul said, whatever weapon you have on you is your primary weapon. And whether, like, there's times and places where you can't carry a rifle, but beyond that, I'm just not going to, because I'm 0 for 16,000, I'm just not going to carry a rifle around with me every day. So the reality is, even a guy like me that I've already said, I kind of consciously train my rifle more than my pistol. I do train both, but it does lean towards the rifle a little bit more. The reality is, even though I'm 0 for 16,000, it is a higher likelihood that I would need to use a pistol if I had to use a firearm. If I had the choice going in, I would choose a rifle. But the reality is I am far, 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 far more likely to just have a pistol and the clothes that I'm wearing. Not all my tactical gear, not my combat gear, not any of that stuff.
Right. So well, folks, that is the exercise for today's show. I know that we could probably go on for hours about this topic, and we could probably throw up hundreds of different scenarios to weigh the two options. And I know we kind of talked about the choice of the rifle over the pistol today, and then your kit, what that involves. And I think it just comes down to it's dealer's choice, first off, and nobody can tell you what the best kit to wear is. It's what works for you, and nobody can tell you what the best weapon platform is. What works for you, what you have. You may not have a rifle, so the pistol is your only option. But all of it is a great conversation piece, but you, like Jamie said, you've got to be honest with yourself, and you have to understand, well, what is the kit that you're putting together? What is it going to be used for? How are you going to use it? How are you going to train with it? That's the last part of it. Whatever you decide, make sure you train with it. If you're going to focus on becoming the best pistol shooter with your everyday carry pistol, then train with that pistol. Train with the way that you dress. This is how I dress. My carry position is appendix. So I want to make sure that I take as many classes as I can that will allow me to train with an appendix holster. One of the great things about the Viking Tactics class that I just took recently is doesn't matter. If you carry appendix, train with an appendix. He just tells you, just be careful. There's instructors out there that wouldn't let you do that. I mean, you've got to weigh those options yourself. But, you know, at the end of the day, the decision is yours. Just make it and then train on it and become better with it. Make smart choices. And that's it. That's all I got. I hope that you guys have taken back some information, some knowledge, and then maybe have some questions now that we've talked about it. But at the end of the day, it's your choice, and you guys have to be good with the choice that you make. Jamie?
Well, I need to see if Viking Tactics offers a class that will allow me to train shirtless and shoeless with a Beretta taped to my back with Christmas tape, because that's really the most realistic scenario that's probably going to happen. But no, if you're listening, like if you're interested in kit, like I'm a total gear queer. If you want to know what belt I use and what plate carrier I recommend and what armor plates I have and what, like, I will gladly tell you all of that. But you have to be realistic with yourself and what you think you're most likely to use. I can discuss specific kit with you all day long, sure. But like Chris said, whatever you're going to have, make sure you train with it. If you're not going to train with it, don't waste your time and money. Like, put that money and effort towards training to the more realistic scenarios. And like Chris's sign off used to be, don't be somebody else's resupply. And if something goes down and you fully kit up in your tactical kit and go hit the streets, like, and you haven't trained and you don't have a bunch of friends with you, you're gonna end up being somebody's resupply. So all of this feeds into my sign off, which is to say that it's easy to be hard, it's hard to be smart. So be smart, be realistic.
All right, guys. Well, until next time, you stay safe out there. ZP002.
Gideon Optics says thanks for supporting the Firearms Radio Network. Check out their rifle optics like the Guardian LPVO and pistol optics like the Omega and Rock. Fair prices and great performance on whatever optics you need. Visit GideonOptics.com, where affordability meets quality. Save 10% with code FRN10. Now, listen to another podcast.